anywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Good morning. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's off today. Wayne Resnick filling in. And I'll give you a little heads up. In about 15-ish minutes, you'll have a chance to win $1,000 here on KFI. Also, I am doing this next segment under significant pressure, which is to say the pressure from my bladder, because I definitely mistimed my bathroom opportunities. And there's a little more in there than I would prefer at this time, but I'm going to soldier on for you. Let's talk about something they call Brady lists. Brady lists are lists that prosecutors keep of police officers whose credibility has been tarnished, generally due to previous episodes of that officer lying in court, lying on a search warrant affidavit, or something like that, which would speak directly to whether you might believe them, but also sometimes for other reasons, like excessive force complaints, which may not necessarily have anything to do with the believability of the officer. And the reason that it seems a little bit loosey-goosey there in terms of, well, how do you end up on this list, is because there are no rules, there are no guidelines, there are no standards. Let's talk about a particularly bad fellow. And I bring this gentleman to your attention as the contrast to the fact, and it remains the fact, and I know that it feels sometimes like police officers are getting worse somehow. That is a function of more reporting of things, so it feels like there's more of these incidents. The fact is that virtually every police officer, minus a very small percentage, goes through their whole career without perpetrating any of these terrible things. But there are some who do, and that is for sure, and this guy's one of them. His name is Jeff Nelson, and he's a police officer. Here are some things that happened with Officer Jeff Nelson. One thing that happened is some guy is crossing the street in front of Officer Nelson's car, and suddenly Officer Nelson swerves his car and pins the guy against a fence. He broke both of the guy's ankles. Why did he do it? What was the guy doing? Nothing. Why did he do it? He said, oh, I know that guy, and he's a dangerous criminal. Also, he was trying to arrest somebody in 2019, punched the guy 7 times, and then shot him in the torso. The guy falls to the ground, having been shot in the torso, and Officer Nelson shoots him again in the head. Kills him. Now, Officer Nelson said when he fired that second shot into the guy's head that this guy was starting to get up and ready to spring forward again. However, witnesses said that was BS, and police video said it was BS, and surveillance video said it was BS. And then you have a guy who was behaving kind of erratically, having some kind of mental health crisis. Here comes Officer Nelson, orders his police dog to attack the guy, shoots this guy in the torso. Sound familiar? This guy falls, shoots him in the head. Sound familiar? He said, oh, my life was in danger because the guy was high and he had a knife, and the city had to settle for $1.25 million to the guy's family. So here's a guy with a pattern of some fairly egregious stuff. But prosecutors never put them on their Brady list. They call it a potential impeachment disclosure list. And it comes from that case of Brady that says prosecutors have to give the defense any exculpatory evidence. If they have evidence that would help the defense, they have to turn it over. And so one of the things that some prosecutors will do is when they get credible information that an officer is no longer reliable and will be easily impeachable on the stand. They put him on a list. Sometimes they call it a do not call list. And they won't, if a case comes in with that officer, they won't file the case. Because they don't want to get into putting a guy on the stand when they know the defense will immediately be able to bring up all of this terrible stuff about the officer. The problem with this is there are no rules or regulations. There's no standardized approach to why you put an officer on this list or whether you even keep a list. There's a lot of big cities whose their DAs don't even keep a list like this. Other cities have a list. L.A. is one of these cities. They have a list, and it's very robust because there are people on there, there are cops on there who have lied, but there's also cops on there who have had excessive force complaints, and that may not be the right reason to exclude a police officer from participating in cases anymore. So the point is there needs to be some standardization because it's the same purpose wherever you are. If you're in Philadelphia or you're in Los Angeles or you're in the middle of Alabama, it's the same purpose. It's to help prosecutors decide how to properly present a case and not waste their time. So there's no reason to have the approach be all over the place, but it is. And this cuts both ways. Because notice, I'm not saying we need to put more officers on this list. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying there should be standards so that the only officers on this list are officers who should be on this list. You might be in one jurisdiction where it's very pro-cop and there are officers who should be on this list and they're not. Then gosh, LA, especially with this DA, I wonder how many officers are being put on that list and they do not deserve it. And it's flat out unfair. All right, here's what I would like to do, and since I'm hosting the show, it's what's going to happen. I've never been a dictator before. It feels pretty good. We're going to get a news update from Jennifer Jones Lee, and then we're going to come back, and we will talk about In-N-Out and some controversy with In-N-Out and vaccines. But before I do that, I will give you a chance to win $1,000, and that's coming up all on KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Bill Handel Show. He's off today. Now, in a moment, we're going to talk about In-N-Out and some big flap doodle between In-N-Out and the health department over vaccine mandates. But first, here is your chance to win $1,000.
KFI has your chance to win $1,000.
Text the nationwide keyword
cash, C-A-S-H,
to 200-200.
You'll get a confirmation text and info.
Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest.
That's cash to 200-200.
And if you win, you get a call. It'll be from a number you don't know, and you have to pick it up because they don't call back. They just move on to somebody else. There's a chance every hour, about 20 after the hour, starting at 5:20 a.m. with wake-up call, all the way through 7:20 p.m. with Conway. That's Monday through Friday, and it means that there's another chance in just an hour from now. Well, In-N-Out has a branch up there in San Francisco, and that branch got shut down by the health department because they were not enforcing the city's vaccine mandate. You have to be vaccinated to go into businesses, and they weren't doing it, and some people did complain. According to the health department, they went there many times. They really tried to work with the In-N-Out up there, and eventually they'd had enough. And so they issued one of those notices that you're going to be shut down. Then the In-N-Out up there decided to play ball. So, but not really. Because one of the guys at In-N-Out Corporate, let me find his name for you. Arnie Wensinger, Chief Legal and Business Officer. He said, "We refuse to become the vaccination police for any government." So when the health department shut them down, what they did is they said, "Fine, no more inside dining. We will have outdoor dining because you do not have to be vaccinated, and we will have takeout because you do not have to be vaccinated to come in and get a takeout order." And he said, "Look, we put up signs telling the patrons about the vaccine requirements, But the public health department came and said, it's on us to enforce it. That we have to look at photo ID and a vaccine card from every customer, and we're not going to do that. We're not about that. So that's how that resolved itself. And I don't know at that store. I've never been to that store. I don't know how it's laid out. So I don't know how much indoor, inside dining is a part of their revenue stream. This may or may not be hurting them financially. But it brings up a really troubling thing. Now, I'm totally pro-vaccine, and when you talk about mandates, there are certain arenas where I'm all for a mandate. If an employer wants to mandate vaccines for their employees, that's fine with me. I believe they should have the authority to do that, because what you have is you have basically the boss telling the people they directly supervise or employ, you have to do something. Same thing with a government ordering its own employees. So if the city of LA wants to say, if you work for the city of LA, you have to get a vaccine, it's the same straight line. We have the authority over you. It is within our authority to make you do this, so we're going to make you do it. Now, the vaccine mandates at businesses, and what's going on up in San Francisco is exactly what's going to be going on here in LA pretty soon. It is the public health department issuing a vaccine mandate and putting the responsibility to enforce it on the business. And it's different than the mask mandate. The mask mandate here in LA is a mandate on people. If you as a person go into certain businesses, you have to wear a mask. The business's obligation is limited to posting a sign and having masks available if someone shows up without a mask, to be able to say, hey, we have a mask for you. That's it. So if you go into a store and people are walking around with no masks, if the sign is there, if they have masks behind the counter, nothing happens to the business. The Department of Public Health can't find the business. They would have to try to find the people who weren't wearing the mask and find them. Well, the vaccine thing is different, because it's the business that will face fines if they do not enforce the county's public health order, or city's, in the case of LA, public health order. And I just find that to be, and I'm looking at it not politically and not morally and not ethically, but just pragmatically, it seems like a troublesome idea. People have behaved poorly when confronted with requirements. There have been incidents of violence. Many businesses don't have enough employees to even do their business. And against that backdrop, in LA, it's the city. I guess up there, it's the city too. You have a government entity putting the onus on a business to become an enforcement arm of the government order. So this is what I would do. And I know that this isn't practical either, but at least it's fair. If I'm the county health officer and I want their to be a requirement that you have to be vaccinated to go into a business, I think I have the obligation to supply the enforcement mechanism on behalf of the business. We don't have enough public health officers to go stand at every store. But putting the mandate in place and saying it's your problem is putting a burden on a private business that they may not be equipped to handle. And the public health department is in some ways the boss of a business. If you're a restaurant, for example, I mean, you definitely want to do, if you can, what the public health department wants. But if you're running a comic book store, how much interaction do you even have with the Department of Health on a daily, normally? I wouldn't imagine very much. Now, all of a sudden, their mandate is 100% controlling what you have to do at your business. And you have to think about, do you hire a security guard? Do you try to get your employees to do this for you? So I'm not opposed to the ideas of these things, but it seems like, and we see this with the In and Out up there, and they just fought back and said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to have people inside. And businesses in LA are going to have to figure out very soon. And it's because the health department's putting the enforcement mechanism onto the business. Business owner might not even agree with it. I'd rather see a situation where if a government agency is going to order something, they also enforce it. All right, that's enough of that rant. I would love a news update from Jennifer Jones Lee. And then it'll be time for Handle on the News Late Edition right here on KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Handle on the News. Late Edition.
Handle on the News.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Good morning. It is the Bill Handel Show. Bill is off today, but you've got the morning crew here, Jennifer Jones Lee and me, and we are getting ready to do some Handle on the News Late Edition for you. Are you ready, Jen?
Ready, ready.
All right, lead story. Kids love Pfizer. Pfizer says its COVID-19 vaccine is more than 90% effective in kids 5 to 11 in preventing symptomatic infections. That's study details they released. Here in the United States, I guess the FDA, that advisory panel, will meet next week and go over this to see if they will authorize the shots for the youngins.
All right. This is what a lot of people want to know. What, if anything, did Brian Laundrie's family know about his disappearance? Now, the Laundrie family's attorney, Stephen Bertolino, was on Good Morning America. He told George Stephanopoulos the family does not yet know the cause of Brian Laundrie's death. And they, I guess Stephanopoulos asked him, have you found any new information out from the items that were found by the body? And he said, none at all. As you can see from the video that's circulating, there was a white bag picked up by Chris Laundrie, that's the dad, almost immediately turned over to law enforcement. Law enforcement found the backpack. I do not know if the notebook was in the white bag that Chris, the dad, picked up, or was it in the backpack that law enforcement picked up? Because a lot of people are saying, hey, if this was all underwater, the notebook? Was it dry? Was it not? Was it wet? Was the bag wet? Was the backpack wet? I mean, there are just way too many questions in this. So everything that we'd be talking about right now would be speculation. Mm-hmm. But the family definitely is on the hot seat right now.
Yeah, I wonder if they are going to end up with some kind of obstruction of justice charge.
Well, I mean, would it be on the premise that they were accused of planting evidence?
No, it would be before. It would be the not telling them the right day that he
left, that sort of thing.
If they can prove that they kind of knew that they were making it more complicated for the cops. Okay, I guess this is a little bit of good news that comes out of a terrible situation. You remember that train where a woman was being raped and everybody stood around and just filmed it? Well, the Delaware County DA says that is not true. People were not standing around callously filming it and not calling 911. He said, we've looked at all the videos from the whole thing. People are getting on and off the train at every stop. They don't necessarily know. They get on the train. They don't know what's going on. They may not even be on the train long enough to realize what's going on. And that some of the people who did take the video have turned that video over to the authorities and are cooperating with the authorities.
Does that make it better?
It makes it not worse, I guess. I mean, look, let's not forget what's at the core of this is this poor woman was brutally assaulted on this train. The side thing of how did people react and all of that is, that's what seems to be in flux a little bit. It doesn't change the core horror of the thing.
I think, too, though, that it adds to it from the aspect of you're having something horrible happen to you. You're being sexually assaulted by somebody. You're probably screaming your head off or freaking out or whatever, and nobody helps you. I mean, that's the part to me that would almost seem like, what an out-of-body experience for this woman. Not only is she being attacked, but people around her aren't helping her. They're videoing this. I don't know.
There have been incidents like this going back decades, you know, of somebody, Kitty Genovese in New York.
Yeah.
Been stabbed to death and nobody did anything. But he's, I guess the DA's just trying to say, we don't have any evidence there was a person, any person who stood there for a long time knowing it was a rape and callously in their mind said, I'm not going to help. I'm not going to call 911. I'm just going to keep filming. That particular sub-strain of not helping, he says there's no evidence that happened. That definitely they were not inundated with 911 calls about it. We know that. And there were people who were pointing their cameras at it, but we don't know maybe as much about what they thought was going on. Let's get a news update from you if you don't mind, and then we will continue. Your friend, your buddy Gavin Newsom talking some big talk about oil drilling in the state. Can't wait for you to tell us. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. We're doing Handel on the News late edition. But first, Alec Baldwin has said something about the incident on the movie set where a woman died and the director was injured. Jen, what's going on with him?
Yeah, he has commented now since he was the one, according to cops, who used this prop gun and shot the cinematographer, killed her, and also the director of the movie was injured but is now out of the hospital. On Twitter, he says, there are no words to convey my shock and sadness regarding the tragic accident that took the life of Helena Hutchins, a wife, mother, and deeply admired colleague of ours. I'm fully cooperating with police investigation to address how this tragedy occurred, and I am in touch with her husband, offering my support to him and his family. My heart's broken for her husband, their son, and all who knew and loved Helena.
Oh, poor you. Poor you with your broken heart, Alec Baldwin. I think this is too soon. This is too soon to make it narcissistic.
Well, and put it on, I don't know, Twitter just makes it feel...
It's also, yeah, it feels half-assed, right? Oh, yeah. I'll send a tweet.
It feels PR-y. Mm-hmm. This is what my PR person told me to do.
Yeah.
Twitter and what I'm done.
I suppose. Yeah. I suppose if it was a true accident, then he also, in a sense, is a victim. Not to the same extent, obviously, but he is also a victim of circumstance. But I would like to know a little more about whether there's any culpability for behaving unsafely, for example, before I decide if I'm going to look at Alec Baldwin and say, oh, poor him, he's going to have to live with this for the rest of his life and he didn't do anything wrong. Or I'm going to say, well, you were not following rules and we just don't know anything about it yet.
One thing, though, that's interesting is just hours before the shooting, Baldwin put on Instagram that he was back to in-person filming and it was exhausting.
All right. See, again, the tendency to speculate, but it doesn't help. I mean, you and me after the show, if you want to sit down, you know, and gab all day, I'll do it. But I guess this in terms of presenting information and news, we don't know enough yet.
But he did say it was exhausting. And I just wonder if should there be negligence or something filed against him in the future, could somebody use that? Could an attorney use that?
Yeah, but it depends on, we're putting the cart before the horse, though. It depends on what happened.
Correct. Right.
But potentially, if he did something that he shouldn't have done, and it's the kind of thing that maybe happened because he was so exhausted, and he's a producer on this movie, you could say negligence in terms of whatever hours they were making people work that got him so exhausted that he then messed up. But again, it's too soon for the conversation we've been having, really. So let's move on to, now I'm only going to say this once because I just thought of it and it's totally dumb and it's inappropriate and I'm not trying to compete with John and Ken, but just one time, indulge me. Okay. So Pretty Boy Soy has made a big announcement about oil drilling in California.
Governor Newsom.
It won't happen again.
took a first step toward banning new oil and gas wells within 3,200 feet of homes, schools, and healthcare facilities. He's requiring emissions monitoring of existing wells within those buffer zones. And this has all been urged by environmental groups, especially after we just had that oil spill off the coast of OC. This renewed conversation, not that it hadn't been there, but just sort of the level of volume on the conversation was turned up, and he acted quickly on it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a reasonable idea. You don't want to be living that close to one of those facilities, and there are a lot of problems that are going on. So I do support him 100% on doing it. Did you know that you can make donations for a candidate, not to a candidate, but for a candidate to a charitable cause? Like Eric Garcetti has the Mayor's Fund,
sure.
And sometimes they will say, hey, we want to raise money so the Mayor's Fund, a charitable organization, can do A, B, or C. And you can make a donation to the Mayor's Fund. But because of the way that they're made, nobody can know who's making the donation. And that makes it impossible to know if there's any conflicts of interest or any graft going on or any alleged Ridley Thomasing happening. And so regulators now are putting in new transparency requirements. Because what happens is, have you ever heard of a, what are they called, donor-advised fund or donor-directed fund? It's an investment account.
Yeah.
It's an investment account for the purpose of giving to charity. You put money into it and it grows, and then whenever you want, you can disperse money from it to a charity. Okay. So Garcetti, people set up these funds, and then Garcetti gets on the news and he says, oh, the Mayor's Fund wants to raise money to give kids hacky sack. And somebody goes, I like that. Please send the Mayor's Fund $1 million from my donor-directed account. So the point is, nobody knows then that $1 million donation was made by you. They only know the charitable organization that runs the fund. So this is just an effort to try to see, hey, are people giving millions of dollars to politicians' charities and then getting special treatment? That wouldn't happen.
What? All right. There's a woman who was arrested by cops in Garden Grove a decade ago for DUI. She was actually having a stroke, and she's received now an $800,000 settlement from the Garden Grove PD. And what happened was, this woman, she didn't even know that she had clipped a truck with her car. Then the cops pull up behind her. She doesn't even see them. And when she does, she makes kind of a jerking motion. So they automatically assume now she's clipped a car. She's made a jerking motion. And we think that then she's DUI, right? Well, they pull her over. And she told the officer that she had been to the hospital and that her mother didn't feel good and there was something wrong with her. That was according to the daughter. And so the woman didn't even know that she had suffered a stroke. The cop didn't know that the woman had suffered a stroke. And so then, therefore, he arrests her for DUI.
Well, to be fair, the officer who pulled her over called paramedics. And then the other cops came and they put her through a sobriety test. And they felt she failed the sobriety test and therefore was drunk. But the problem is, she had had a stroke.
Had a stroke,
and
right.
Because they already knew there was a medical issue and the first officer had called for medical help, they should have been very aware, and that's why they shouldn't have popped her for DUI. If I pull you over and you had a stroke and I don't know it and I think you seem drunk and I just alone put you through sobriety tests, it's not quite as egregious. There was reason to believe that whatever problems she was having with the sobriety test were because of a medical problem. All right, that's Handle on the News. Now, let's get a news update from Jennifer Jones Lee. And then, something is so popular that you can't get it anymore. This is an industry that you probably forgot about for a while, and it is now so popular again that it is a victim of its own success, and it's round, and it's 12 inches across, and it's usually black, but sometimes it's other colors. This is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.